For thousands of years, man has marveled at the mystery of the starry heavens. Today, he scans the universe awestruck at its fathomless size and complexity, yearning as never before to understand where he fits in the cosmic scheme of things. What secrets lie hidden beyond the distant realm of the nebulae? Is there life out there, or is life unique to the Earth? Only recently, with the invention of sophisticated spacecraft and the development of highly sensitive radio telescopes, has man been able to take positive steps toward resolving the haunting question of whether intelligent beings exist in other worlds. In a moment, we'll take a look at our awesome universe and ponder that intriguing question: is man alone? Anytime you're fortunate enough to get away from the lights of a city and look up into a cloudless sky at night, you ought to be just absolutely inspired by what you see. And you will probably be able to see 1,000 stars, but you have no comparison as to how large they are, how far away they are. You will be able to see our own galaxy on a real clear night, the Milky Way, as if it were a star-studded ribbon circling the sky, the familiar constellations that we learn in high school, a lot of us can mention, like the Pleiades, Orion, the Big Dipper. And these probably look the same to us as they did to human eyes standing in now long-dead civilizations thousands, who knows how many thousands of years ago. Actually, the human eye can distinguish only about 1,000 stars in the sky, which is why man has built giant telescopes like the one on Mount Wilson near Pasadena here in California, and down at Palomar Mountain near the San Diego area south of Los Angeles. With a telescope, we can see striking globular star clusters, like this one in the constellation of Hercules, or the beautiful open clusters of stars like the Pleiades in the constellation of Taurus. Then there are the fuzzy spots known as nebulae, like the Great Nebula in the Sword of Orion, or perhaps the Horsehead Nebula in the same constellation. These nebulae and the great areas of dust and gas illuminated by nearby stars are millions of billions of miles away, impossible for us to really get a hold of. Yet they're still within the same Milky Way galaxy that we call our galaxy. And of course, far beyond the Milky Way are the awesome galaxies of outer space, many of them with spiral arms, much like our galaxy. This galaxy, the famed Andromeda Galaxy, is just barely visible as a faint, fuzzy patch to the naked eye. But telescopes reveal a distant assembly of stars even larger than the Milky Way. And this galaxy, called M81, has a beautiful symmetry in its spiral arms that is absolutely stunning. We live in a time when spectacular discoveries are revolutionizing man's concepts of the universe. Just as in the past two decades, the discovery of quasars and pulsars have shown that the heavens are much more exciting, more mysterious, and even violent than we had ever previously imagined. Consider the awesome size and complexity of the cosmos that is revealed by modern science. Our Earth is a massive sphere, some 8,000 miles in diameter. And yet our star, the Sun, has a diameter over 100 times larger than the Earth. When viewed from afar, our solar system, the Sun and nine revolving planets, would appear as a disk in space nearly 8,000 million miles across. Already numbers like that stagger our imagination. Perhaps we could better visualize such incredible distances by an analogy. If we were to compress our solar system so that our Sun were reduced to the size of a quarter, 1 inch in diameter, then Pluto, the most distant planet in our solar system, would be the size of a grain of sand located over 400 feet away. And the nearest star, Alpha Centauri, well again, on a scale where our Sun is the size of a quarter, the nearest star would be another quarter, 500 miles away. And in between, nothing, just empty space. Yet our Sun and Alpha Centauri are only two of over 100 billion stars in the giant pinwheel of stars known as the Milky Way. So even our Milky Way is so vast that light, which could travel around the Earth at the snap of a finger, would take 100,000 years to go from the edge of our galaxy, billions of miles across. Yet our galaxy is only one of a number of galaxies in our local group, or even our cluster of galaxies, that could easily be lost in the endless expanse of space. Far beyond our Milky Way and neighboring galaxies lie billions of other galaxies. And since each galaxy contains billions of stars and planets, it would be far easier for us to find that proverbial needle in a haystack than it would be to locate our tiny little planet Earth within the endless expanses of the cosmos. It's in such a gigantic universe with its innumerable stars and perhaps countless planets that mankind ponders that all-important question, could there be other intelligent creatures out there?
Every hour of every day, a majestic parade takes place across the heavens. As a program guide to these celestial wonders, we have prepared an informative booklet entitled Our Awesome Universe. Its descriptions and photographs carry you far into space for a look at the heavens and the questions posed by it. Write Garner Ted Armstrong, Pasadena, California, 91123. In Canada, Box 44, Vancouver, BC. This free booklet will help you comprehend our awesome universe.
Let me send you right away this fascinating brochure, actually like a small magazine, beautifully illustrated with a lot of terrific information that will give you comparisons and everything in here about what we're talking about in this program. You can pick up the telephone right now and dial a toll-free number, 800-423-4444, and we'll have it on its way to you right away the first thing. Those of you living in California, Alaska, or Hawaii should dial area 213. The number is 577-5225. Again, the number 800-423-4444 in California, Alaska, and Hawaii, 213-577-5225. Well, our continued fascination with the mysteries of the heavens is exceeded only by our never-ending question to understand, who am I? Where did I come from? Why am I here? Where am I going? What is this human experience all about? Are there beings in outer space? If so, are they aware of us? Do they actually visit this Earth, or have they ever? The recent Viking expedition to Mars is just one more example of man's intense interest in the possibility of life beyond this Earth. In the summer of 1976, American scientists sent two highly sophisticated spacecraft to the planet Mars, primarily for the purpose of finding out if life exists on that mysterious red planet. And shortly after the historic touchdown on July 20, 1976, the Viking lander sent stunningly clear pictures of the Martian surface to radio telescopes on Earth. Picture after picture showed a stark, rock-strewn Martian surface which looked remarkably like a desert scene in the American Southwest. The Viking lander was also equipped with a special extendable arm that took samples of the Martian soil. We were privileged to talk to Dr. Gerald A. Soffen, chief project scientist for the Viking mission to Mars. Behind him, you will see an exact duplicate of the Viking lander.
Viking is part of NASA's continued planetary exploration program. Specifically, what Viking was aimed at was the surface planetary exploration of Mars. What we're trying to do is get a robot onto the surface of Mars to explore the planet. It is like the extension of our hands and our eyes, our laboratories, on the surface of Mars. Nothing came back but information. We didn't send parts of Mars back. We didn't send an astronaut there. What we did is we placed a laboratory on the surface of Mars, performed a set of experiments, and sent the information back.
What about the results of the biology experiments? Were they surprising to you?
This was the first time that we were able to actually do biological experiments on the surface of Mars. To be specific, we had a laboratory instrument put on the surface of Mars to test for the possibility of life. First of all, we look for it with the cameras. We didn't see any. Secondly, we use this laboratory to test for microbes of life. We didn't see any of those either. By see any, I mean we did not get a response that we could interpret as there being life on Mars. Thirdly, we look for organic chemistry. We went out and asked the question, is there any chemicals of which we think of life being made? And so far, in those two places, we've not found any of those organic molecules either.
Based on these results, could you venture to give some odds for life being on Mars?
Well, I think odds are very difficult to predict. It's when you've got only these few data points, it's very hard. I would say the odds are small, but not zero. That is to say, small because we haven't found any. I mean, after all, our first attempt to look now has not been successful. That doesn't mean we didn't get good results. We got good results, but not convincing enough evidence for me to believe that there's life on Mars. If I had to put odds on it, I'd say, well, the odds are maybe 10%.
There's still some debate about the data from the Viking project, but most people tend to believe, I think, that we really haven't detected anything that could be considered biological, at least biological as we know it, which would mean, of course, that Mars, like the Moon, like Venus or Mercury, is really a very, very dead place. I think perhaps that people's desire to find life on Mars is more of a psychological rather than scientific motivation.
Since Mars was the most likely prospect for extraterrestrial life, it appears that life on other planets in our own solar system could be virtually ruled out. But what about the farthest reaches of space beyond our solar system? Back in 1972, man's first written attempt to communicate with alien intelligence occurred when a special aluminum plaque was attached to the Pioneer 10 space probe, which has a trajectory that will eventually carry it completely out of our solar system. This little plaque carried by Pioneer 10 symbolically describes the origin of the spacecraft and, among other things, portrays a pictorial representation of a man and a woman. The two Voyager probes, now on their way to the outer limits of the solar system, have recordings of Earth sounds in the hope that extraterrestrial beings may someday find these tiny spacecraft and listen to our message. But space probes such as Pioneer and Voyager are far less likely to communicate with extraterrestrial life than would be the radio telescopes right here on Earth. For example, at the Goldstone radio telescope near Barstow, California, radio signals from sources in outer space are being monitored by means of a giant, steerable, 210-foot antenna. Now, actually, the Goldstone radio telescope is able to send and receive radio communications to and from the Viking spacecraft that are now operating on the planet Mars. In fact, this awesome antenna has communicated with the Viking lander at a distance of over 200 million miles. And incredible as it may seem, radio telescopes can detect radio signals from over 10 million billion miles away. And because of this ability to detect radio signals from the remote reaches of space, many people want to use radio telescopes to listen for intelligent signals coming from perhaps another galaxy deep in the far-flung expanse of the universe. We asked Robert Edelson, manager of the SETI project, the Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence, what that stands for, to tell us what they hope to accomplish.
Our basic goal, then, is to detect the evidence of other intelligent life in our universe. Now, the way we will accomplish that is to use some of the existing antenna facilities and equip them with powerful electronic devices which can determine whether a signal is present to some level of power that might be impinging on these antennas. It was actually recognized in 1959 that this was beyond the realm of science fiction, in that even the devices existing at that time could detect signals over interstellar distances.
But purely from a scientific point of view, what are the odds that intelligent beings exist in other parts of the heavens? Is it likely, really? Or are the chances so vanishingly small? Is man a part of a cosmic community of intelligent beings? How many civilizations might reasonably be expected to coexist in one galaxy? That's the type of question we asked.
If you look broadly at the idea of what is the likelihood of there being life, maybe life as we know it or not, life other than we know it, what is the likelihood that that stuff is out there contains some life. I think it's very, very high. I think most scientists believe that the suns that we have seen, the other stars that we've seen, which we now believe to have planets, there's bound to be some that have developed some sort of biological system. The question is, we're looking through our little 20th century blinders only through terrestrial life. We know virtually nothing about other forms of life.
I think the next crucial question becomes, how long does a technologically advanced civilization last? You know, we here on the Earth have existed in a technologically advanced fashion for only about 30 or 40 years. And during only the past 30 or 40 years have we been sending out radio waves that might be picked up by intelligent alien creatures. Many people, sometimes myself included, think that we may have only 30 or 40 years left. And if, in fact, intelligent races of creatures exist for less than a century, the odds of us ultimately communicating with them is exceedingly small.
The estimate comes down to the number of civilizations existing concurrently with us is about numerically equal to the lifetime of those civilizations. If the average lifetime of an advanced civilization is, say, 10,000 years, then there's something like 10,000 civilizations in the galaxy. If it's 100 years, then there's something like 100. And these are very approximate numbers, obviously. The more civilizations there are, the more likely it is that one will be relatively close to us, and the more likely that we can detect evidence of their existence.
Even as early as 1960, astronomer Frank Drake used a giant radio telescope similar to Goldstone at the U.S. National Radio Astronomy Observatory to monitor radio waves from nearby stars in the hope of detecting signals from other civilizations. Drake's experiment, called Project OSMA, failed to pick up any intelligent signals, but the sensitivity of his equipment was not very high. More recently, astronomer Gerrit Verschuer scanned 10 nearby stars for signs of life. His apparatus was so sensitive it could find in 5 minutes what Drake's equipment would have needed 20 days to detect. But again, no unexpected signals were ever detected.
We have never, ever received any kinds of communication or any kinds of signals at all that could, by any stretch of the imagination, could be considered from intelligent beings elsewhere in the galaxy or the universe.
The basic difficulty with these claim detections has been the lack of repeatability. And as far as I am aware, there are no observations of signals that can be repeated that say that intelligent life has in some way been detected by us. So the answer basically is no. There have been no detections.
While many scientists have repeatedly listened for messages from outer space, it was only quite recently that man deliberately sent a radio message to any intelligent civilization that might be assumed to be extant in the relatively close-by cluster of stars known as Messier 1-3. This message was sent by our most powerful radio telescope, the famed 1,000-foot diameter Arecibo radio telescope in Puerto Rico. Equipped with a 450,000-watt transmitter, the Arecibo antenna was able to focus its power to an equivalent of 25 times all the man-made electrical power ever produced on Earth. Yet, for all of that awesome power, the message will be a long, long time en route. About, are you ready for this? About 24,000 years. So sometime around the year AD 26,000, it will reach an area where people hope that intelligent life in some distant star cluster might detect this unusual signal coming from Earth. Being intelligent creatures, it is assumed, these alien residents, according to this theory, would have no trouble breaking the code and receiving their very first hello from a creature called man. But if Earthlings are still here to receive a reply, another 24,000 years after 26,000 A.D., they will be about our 1,600th generation of great-grandchildren, or thereabouts somewhere.
We don't know if human beings will ever visit any stars. But some things we do know for sure. Within the framework of everything that we understand about physics and how the universe works, the stars are so incredibly far away that with anything remotely based on present technology, interstellar space travel is really out of the question. in order to be able to travel to the stars, I think physics and science would have to go through an incredibly profound revolution. We'd have to discover laws of nature that are totally undreamt of. In fact, the kinds of creatures that might be able to travel between the stars would have to be as advanced over us as we are over Neanderthal man.
As far as manned expeditions, it's been calculated that if we sent a rocket, a perfect rocket, far better than anything we could now build, but the perfect rocket to our nearest star, and sent it in a kind of a reasonable sort of time frame on the order of a few years, sent it there and then returned it with perhaps a dozen people aboard, the energy expended in this absolutely perfect rocket, better than we can possibly build today, would be equal to about 500,000 times the annual electrical power consumption of the United States.
So as you have heard, there seems to be an insurmountable difficulties for man to be able to travel to the distant stars in our present physical configurations. Yet this has not dampened his very persistent and prevalent belief that we're not alone in the universe, nor the desire to communicate with these creatures, whatever they are. The idea that man is a unique, intelligent being in the scheme of things is now being replaced by the belief that intelligent consciousness may exist throughout the universe.
So the question becomes one of numbers. You put together the number of stars that are in our galaxy, the number of stars that seem that they might be hospitable to life, the probable number of planets around them, and the length of time over which this evolution could take place. And it seems extremely unlikely that we are the only ones here. This has been called the assumption of mediocrity, saying that we look around us and we see nothing extraordinary about our immediate environment. The rest of the universe seems to be very much the same. So that describing ourselves as unique in the galaxy, as being the only intelligent species, seems to be the most improbable statement of all.
I think it would be very, very self-centered of us to think that man is the only form of life. I mean, it's such an egotistical point of view that I find that very hard to believe. It sort of is a throwback to our earlier thoughts about astronomy, where we thought maybe the Earth was the center of the universe. But we don't really believe that anymore. We think we're important, but we're not the center of the universe, any more than I think that man is the only form of life in the universe. That isn't impossible, but it's unlikely.
Actually, I believe that there are intelligent creatures in outer space, and I happen to believe they've already made contact with us, and that beings from outer space have visited this Earth and have even left documents and records.
Well, life's been pretty good. Summer home, yacht, vacation when I want it. Some little kids sure spent a lot of time with that. Too bad they never last. Yeah, a lot of things are like that. Kids are grown now, and Sandy and I aren't getting any younger. Is this all there is?
You can know the answer to this age-old question. Why were you born? Request your free copy from Ambassador College, Box 111, Pasadena, California. In Canada, Box 44, Vancouver, BC.
Let me send you this handy little booklet you can practically put in your inside coat pocket called Why Were You Born? I mean, a lot of people are pretty futile in this life, and a lot of suicide people are testimony to the fact that a lot of us don't even know what we're doing walking around the earth in the humdrum daily existence that we call life. Why are we here? 800-423-4444. Get you this booklet absolutely free of charge. 800-423-4444, and we even pay the phone bill. If you live in Alaska, California, or Hawaii, please dial area 213. The number is 577-5225. Well, so far, using the largest and most sophisticated of all the telescopes, astronomers have probed the universe to a distance of about 100,000 billion miles, give or take about 3 3 miles and a quarter. You know, it would take a beam of light some 20 billion years to travel this distance, and still astronomers have been unable to find the edge of the universe. Where's the end of it? Perhaps it is endless, and people don't like that word. We don't understand all or ever or never or endless, but nobody really knows. So the latest evidence indicates that the universe is expanding and must have had a unique beginning at a definite time of origin, and they say perhaps 15 billion years ago. But how did our universe come into being by itself? And can your mind settle for that? Is it the product of a divine intelligence and a great creator? Is it true to your finite mind that creation demands a creator, that life demands a life giver, and life from pre-existing life of the same kind? You know, the ancient Bible writers, the heavens were awesome testimony to the creator. You can look at Psalms 19:1. According to Job, it was God who spread out the heavens, who made Arcturus, or the Pleiades, the chambers of the south. When I consider the heavens, mused David, the work of thy fingers, the moon and the stars which you have ordained, then what is man that you are mindful of him? Actually, the Bible says a great deal about the universe. It tells us that the universe is not the product of blind chance and caprice, but is the product of a great intelligence, a great designer and creator. Man has only scratched the surface of knowledge about the heavens. And even with our limited understanding, it's a humbling experience. At the same time, the more man learns about the awesome universe, the more evident the creator should become. You know, the Bible gives an overall perspective of just where man fits into the scheme of things, shows what God is doing here on this earth, what man's potential really is, and why you live, work, eat, sleep, and breathe on good green spaceship Earth. Well, man's ultimate destiny may absolutely lie in our communication with a superior being and in whether or not we ever get in contact with him. And you know, if and when you ever do, you will discover the reason for your life on this earth, and you will be able to discover where you're going, what this human life is all about, what the world is all about, why it is here, and more than that, why there is a universe and where we go from this platform of spaceship Earth on out into space in the future. You be sure to pick up the telephone right now and call that toll-free number for this free brochure, Our Awesome Universe, and also that booklet, Why Were You Born? They're absolutely free of charge. Until next time, Garner Ted Armstrong saying goodbye, friends.
For the free literature offered on this program, write Garner Ted Armstrong, Pasadena, California, 91123. In Canada, Box 44, Vancouver, B.C. Or in the continental United States, you may call this toll-free number, 800-423-4444. That's 800-423-4444. In California, dial direct 213-577-5225. All literature is free upon request.